It's not just about jars. We talk about barmans too. Barmans too.
If you don't know about barmans, you're going to learn. And also, if you want to take a deep dive into sharks, if that's your main deal, you listen to our Deep Blue Sea episode. It was the whole thing about sharks. And that's a great movie, Deep Blue Sea, with a great soundtrack. Check it out on your own time, but not right now, because now it's time for Jaws. Everybody's all in on Jaws. Raise the roof for Jaws.
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today we're talking about Jaws. It's the first blockbuster that ever existed. It was the first film to make over $100 million profit, and today we have two wonderful guests. First of all, it's comedian and writer Chelsea Frank.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, hello, hello to you, Chelsea.
Hi. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm very happy as well. Very excited.
I watched a scary movie for you, and I know that everyone's going to go, it's Jaws. It's not scary anymore. But, like, I've never seen a scary movie in my life.
Wow.
So I watched this shit for you, and you're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. You really sacrificed on my behalf and the listener's behalf.
Yeah. I'm here for the people.
Damn. Okay. A woman of the people, Chelsea Frank, is joining us here today.
Nice to meet you
all. Philanthropist Chelsea Frank.
Thank you so much. Yes.
And joining the two of us is a professor from the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at UCLA. It's Dr. Daniel Blumstein.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. You were just telling us off mic that you hadn't seen this movie since
it came out. There used to be theaters, and I went to theaters, and, you know, that's where it was air conditioned, and it was a really hot summer, and I went with my mom, who never went to in the water again after seeing the film.
Right.
And I remember, you know, watching it when it came out.
Yeah, it was a giant cultural phenomenon and launched Steven Spielberg's career, and I was just looking at his, IMDb to see what he made from the next, 10 years of his life. And it was absolutely mind-boggling. Yeah, it's like every great film.
All the movies. Every movie that's ever made, Steven Spielberg has touched.
Yes.
For such a scary movie, or not scary, but meant to be so
suspenseful,
scary.
Suspenseful
and thriller. There's these little pops of just really beautiful, earnest, mm-hmm. Vulnerable moments that I thought were just really great. And that's so Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
And it's not sort of, the torture porn gore stuff that many horror movies resort to today for cheap thrills. I mean, it's complex. It's simple. It's, it gets at you in interesting ways. And then looking back at it now, it's like, well, why did that scare people out of the water for centuries?
Yeah. I could see that. It's not as scary anymore for sure. But I think the suspense comes in, like you're saying, with our care for these characters. I loved all those scenes of what's his name? The Chief Brody with his son and getting to know them throughout the entire, we don't see the shark till an hour 20 or something like that. So
I think it was broken most of the time.
Yeah, they literally couldn't film the shark because they
kept sinking.
Giant shark. They just kept breaking. It was a complete mess, apparently, making this movie.
But it was a great accident because it made it scarier because you never saw the freaking shark.
I know. I totally agree.
Yeah.
And one of the moves was coming up with the whole barrels, those yellow barrels. It was like, oh, we'll just track the barrels and that's how we'll know the shark is moving. And it makes it so cool and so suspenseful.
The barrel scene was good.
Yeah, I love that stuff. Okay, so listen, before we get into I have a bunch of stuff about the movie. I have stuff about sharks, obviously. But I want to start with a quiz. You guys ready for a quiz? Is that cool?
Great.
I give quizzes. I don't
take them. You're
going
to have me go off on a quiz with a guy who works at UCLA?
That's correct.
I'll fail. It's okay.
Oh, my God.
If you both fail, that's totally fine. Okay, so the quiz is called Think You're Going to Need a Bigger Wealth of Knowledge to Ace This Quiz.
Think you're going to need a bigger wealth of knowledge to ace this quiz.
So, we'll start here. What was the shark's name? And to give you a hint, it was not Jaws.
Shark had a name?
Yes, the shark had a name, especially on set. Everyone was calling the mechanical sharks a certain name. It's become, I don't know, somewhat famous.
I remember the name of the boat.
Okay. That was actually my next question.
Oh,
if you want to rock that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Orca?
That's right. The orca.
Fuck yeah.
Absolutely. The name of the shark is
Bruce.
You
must have just watched this.
Literally last night.
Okay. I watched it a couple weeks ago.
Okay.
Oh, there it is.
No retention.
I also watched it last night and loved it all over again. But yeah, it was Bruce, and it was named after Spielberg's attorney, Bruce Raymer.
Bruce?
Yeah, Bruce.
When was that ever mentioned?
It wasn't mentioned in the movie.
Well, how would we have known that?
It's
trivia.
Folklore. Yeah, people, you know, I don't know.
It'd be alive in the 70s, I guess.
Okay. Sorry. Oops.
It's your parents' fault, actually. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, and then my second question was the name of Quint's boat, which is the Orca. And I wanted to mention that the entire ocean portion of the Jaws shoot was plagued with technical difficulties, and at one point, the Orca actually sank with Robert Shaw, Roy Scheider, and Richard Dreyfuss aboard, and due to a malfunction, the boat started leaking, causing Spielberg to send another boat in a mad dash to retrieve the actors and crew from the sinking ship. So quite the
what a metaphor for this entire production.
Yeah. Okay. Robert Shaw, the man who played Quint, wasn't afraid of sharks, but he was afraid of what during filming?
Are these all questions about, like, the process of this movie or the actual movie?
No, that was in the film. I forget what it was, though.
No, this is not in the film. This
Really?
Is his real life. Shaw's real life. I just figure you can take a guess. You don't have to be...
Car accidents.
What are we all afraid of? Intimacy.
Intimacy.
I'm going to go. I'm going to take a wild guess.
Robert Shaw, the native Brit, was reportedly being pursued by both the IRS and British taxmen, causing the actor to flee the country on weekends to Canada to avoid facing a tax liability for spending too many hours on U.S. soil. In fact, Shaw had to forego his salary on the film in order to make amends with the IRS for his charges of tax evasion, which I thought was also just perfect for the character of Quint. Just seemed like he was a... I don't know, a rebel, let's say. Okay, speaking of Quint, why was he so tough to work with during the making of Jaws?
I think he was an alcoholic.
That's correct. He was drinking famously drunk throughout the shoot. In fact, when it came time to film his like famous monologue about the sinking Indianapolis, he was wasted, and Spielberg deemed all of the footage unusable, and he felt really terrible, and so begged him for another try, and then came back and nailed it sober in one day, in one take, sorry. Pretty cool.
I mean, if you're going to be a raging alcoholic, but you still want to have a career, that's the way to do it. Just get it together in the 11th hour enough, yeah. And people will be like, all right, whatever.
That guy's a badass.
You're a hot mess, but yeah. We'll still rehire you.
He's got what it takes.
Yeah.
Okay, last one. This is a really weird one. So Spielberg was 27 years old and battling anxiety and insomnia while making Jaws. To combat this, what did he have sent out to him from home?
Chocolate chip cookies.
Wow.
Okay. I love chocolate chip cookies.
27. God, I want to kill myself just hearing that.
Yeah.
Jesus. Porn and let's think.
The 70s. There wasn't porn then.
Yeah, magazines. Just magazines from the attic. Some like little like plastic toy.
How about his dog?
All of these would have been great, but it's his pillow. He wanted his pillow from home, and he also put a stalk of celery underneath his pillow.
What a loser.
Because the smell soothed his nerves, which I'd never heard of before.
Sure, it wasn't Passover or something?
I don't think so. So anyway, that's our Jaws quiz there. So I absolutely love this movie. I can see why... It's, for some people, possibly doesn't hold up or maybe is too slow or whatever. But I just have to weigh in and say that it's absolutely fantastic. I love the characters. I love how it was shot. And I have some very stupid notes that I wrote down during the film. So one, and I don't know if you can weigh in on this. Feel free to tell me you have no idea. This lady's being attacked in the first scene of the film by the shark. We don't see the shark, but we see her getting attacked. And she's, like, moving very quickly from side to side. And so that was my question, I guess, is, like, when sharks attack people, why would they do that? Why would they pull them like that and then let them go?
Well, I mean, I think sharks attack kind of like missiles. You know, they if they're hunting a sea mammal... They're going to, you know, detect the thing, then go deep and then come up.
Okay.
And, you know, often you see things blown out of the water when sharks are attacking them. And it's pretty, wild. Maybe that wasn't a full-on attack. So there are hypotheses about sharks being confused by us and taking little nibbles. So this was a nibble as opposed to an explosive attack. And
okay. There
are some people sort of looking at the dynamics of human sharks attacking humans versus sea mammals and saying, no, they're not really hunting us. They're confused. They're sort of nibbling. So
okay. Maybe
that's sort of a nibble. But, you know, yeah. A nibble for something with that many teeth is would cause me to jerk back and forth as well.
Yeah. Ruin your weekend.
I have a question about that. How is it scientifically possible that girl was sprinting without a bra on and not crying the entire time? She got naked. You know how she was like running and just like taking off her clothes?
Yep.
And then she's like fully topless and just sprinting without any kind of like,
this
hurts. Wasted
maybe? Does that help?
How is that? I was like, that does not hold up. Okay. That doesn't carry to 2019 when we know better now.
Yeah. Yeah.
When directors are like, you would not do that. It would hurt.
Give her some support.
She's about to get her like legs chopped off and eaten from, you know.
We
give
just
her a
did
la-
Jurassic World recently. And Claire in that movie is running in heels the entire film. Like sprinting away from dinosaurs in heels. It's just, got to give these women some help. Some
give
credit.
Her a nice pair of flats.
Yeah, some New Balances.
Some New Balances.
Jesus. I did read a thing about great white sharks that they do attack by... They don't just like eat you whole, or you know, sometimes in this movie they just like take people out, but apparently they just like attack you, leave you bleeding, and then just leave and let you die on your own and then come back when it's like way easier. So I don't know, maybe that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, why lose teeth and get your nose beaten up if you don't have to?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, normally these things are, you know, eating things that can probably pack a punch.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
That's so petty though.
But like, it's smart.
Yeah.
Smart move.
So petty, though. It's like, I'm going to emotionally and physically destroy you, and then I'm just going to, like, leave for a bit and see what happens, and then come back when I don't have to deal with how hard it is to have ruined your life and everybody you love.
Okay.
I mean, Komodo dragons are interesting because Komodo dragons are like these big lizards that, you know, eat people on the island of Komodo. And there's a famous story about this photographer who had a Hasselblad, and he was this German guy, and he was studying the Komodo dragons, and he's photographing them, and eventually they found his Hasselblad with tooth marks in it and not much of him.
Whoa.
But Komodo dragons are big. But when they're hunting normal things, goats, other things, you know, that size mammals, they have all sorts of like bad bacteria in their mouth. And the idea is when they bite something, it'll cause sepsis. So, people have talked about goannas and Komodo dragons as not necessarily having to kill things right off, but rather getting them sick, having them die, and then it's easier to get them.
I got you.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know, but many people have talked about that.
Chelsea is grossed out.
This is why I went to art school and not science class ever.
Avoid this exact thing.
Human bites are the worst.
Is that true?
Look out
no
for human
way.
Bites. All sorts of bad bacteria in our mouths.
Really?
Yeah.
We all have HPV. We're all disgusting, you know?
Well, yeah, but I feel like I'd rather be bitten by either of you than like a snake or, I don't know, a snapping turtle or some shit.
Yeah, I agree. Like
human
really?
Bites apparently give all sorts of problems. If you get a human bite, you
like know. A real, like you're like break the, you know, like the real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, getting in there.
I mean,
still, what about just shark? These sharks look, I don't know, man. I was looking at pictures all day.
I'm talking about the bacteria, you know, trauma of a shark bite.
Okay, it's something else.
Yeah.
Wait, what's happening when a human bites someone?
Yeah. Like, all sorts of bacteria in your mouth and it causes infections.
Ugh. Damn.
Yeah.
Gross. What do you do if a human bites you?
Wash them well. Go to the doctor.
Go to the doctor and just get that shit like
cleaned out.
And wash that human while you're at it.
Yeah, really?
Yeah.
Say no, sit, stay.
How do you make your mouth not as like disgusting?
Yeah, we need our bacteria. I mean, so the new frontier in biology is really looking at our microbial, you know, communities that live on us. We're covered with cells from all sorts of other animals, and these other animals make us healthy. These other animals make us sick at times. These other animals, you know, allow us to exist. So we digest things, and we can get what are called dysbioses if these bacteria get out of balance, which is really cool because, you know, we're just a vessel for our bacteria. So everyone's studying that. They make us happy. So there's a mind-gut connection, and you eat certain things, and maybe that actually does make you happy. And certain gut bacteria.
What things can we eat that will make us happy?
Probably things. People are talking about whether you can change it with diet, or you're just trying to cultivate the actual bacteria that are creating the.
Because if it's the gut, you're talking about more like long-term
diet, long-term.
Like not the instantaneous gratification I get from a cookie.
So sugar and chocolates and things like that, you know, might, but they if they also stimulate bacteria to do certain things, people are still studying this. You know, that could lead to a dose of serotonin that just affects your mood immediately. Maybe that's how chocolate works.
Is this the whole like probiotic craze with kombucha and all this?
That's part of it. Okay. Whether that works or not, whether you can change your ecosystem. So I like to talk about, like, you know, since we're having a water theme here, you know, a beautiful coral reef and a beautiful coral reef's gorgeous, but there's another state that that coral reef can exist in, and that's what's called an algal dominated state, where you have a bunch of algae growing out of it. I prefer the coral with corals and things like that rather than the algae.
Yeah.
So each of those states is very stable.
Okay.
And sharks are actually part of that. Ooh. And each of those states is really stable, and it's hard to get from one to another. So you could have a beautiful coral reef in your gut, or you could have, you know, an algal dominated state.
Oh.
And getting from one to the other isn't about just taking a few more probiotics or something like that. So it's a little more complex than that.
Is it possible if you like have, if you're like taking a probiotic or drinking too much kombucha or whatever, like you can have too much bacteria or yeast, or like overdoing it, and then your body's just like one big yeast infection all the time?
Don't know, and I don't think we're changing it a lot. Now, people are talking about prebiotics, which is not like probiotics, and I don't really know the difference between these things. But, I mean, people are thinking about, you know, how you change from one state to another, particularly if you're sick. Mm. I mean, you know, most of us are in a state that is kind of healthy-ish.
Okay.
So when you get a dysbiosis, some of these will kill you. Some of these are one bacteria sort of takes over your gut, and if you don't get rid of that, you can die. So then people talk about fecal transplants or using fecal transplants to get rid of these things.
Fecal transplants.
Yeah, yeah.
This is like taking a turn.
Yeah.
I am here for it too.
Yeah, so.
You can always talk about fecal transplants.
I love a fecal transplant.
I had no idea fecal transplants
Happy
existed.
Happy New Year, you know? Let's talk about it.
Describe what that is.
So basically, the idea is, how do you change your, you know, gut flora.
Okay.
And, you know, where does it come from? Well, it either comes from your mouth or it comes from the bottom. So one way is you sort of clean everything out and you get an elixir of healthy feces, which is just basically bacteria,
okay,
and shove it up. And this saves people's lives if they have one particular sort of bacterial problem. Now, it doesn't necessarily work for normal healthy people or slightly sick people, but if you have one particular, you know, problem, this actually saves people's lives.
How many times do you have to do it?
I don't know. A couple times, I think, typically.
And you do it yourself, or you have to get a trusted loved one to shove bacteria up your ass?
People are doing it themselves, and that's called biohacking. Probably not a good idea. But, I mean, you know, clinics are now doing
it. Black market bacteria.
I need some good shit, man.
That's amazing.
And why? Because it's faster than eating stuff?
Well, because eating stuff isn't going to change it where it needs to change, sort of in the colon and in the intestines. So it goes into the intestines.
It's a little backdoor, pun intended.
Whoa.
Hey, come on.
Damn.
It's a shortcut.
It's a shortcut. Well, it's getting it where it needs to be.
Got it.
Where things are being digested.
It's really, what a wild world we live in. That's
okay.
Crazy.
I mean, Kush, I'm sorry we made you uncomfortable. I get it.
He's like, wait, hold on a second. I got to go check something out.
Okay, well, listen, since we're off topic a little bit anyways, you have a specialty in marmots. And so before you came in, we were looking at some pictures of marmots that are still up there.
Why are you laughing?
Because they're adorable. We were like going back and forth about exactly what it was. I said that it's like a squirrel's grandfather. I don't know if that's accurate. Probably not. But Brett was saying that they're like three times as big as squirrels, or like the largest of the squirrel species.
Our guys are hibernating now. They're about 5 to 6 kilos. Some of them are even bigger. So, you know, 12, 15 pounds.
Okay.
So they're cat sized.
What got you into this?
What?
How deep are you in the marmot hole? Tell me about that.
I'm an enthusiast.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm interested in behavior. I study behavior. I'm interested in conservation. I'm interested in why animals do different things. And, you know, what do you study? Well, it's nice if you study something with an address. So marmots have an address.
Cool.
And they're active during the day. And I study birds and other things as well. And I study marine things. But mammals, most mammals are nocturnal. And most mammals are bats, and they fly, and they're nocturnal, and they have diseases that will kill you. Marmots are ground squirrels, and they have an address. They have a colony, so you know where they are, so you can mark them, and you can watch them during the day, and you don't have to get up at 3 in the morning like you do if you study birds. You can get up at 6 instead, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And then I now run this project. I've looked, there are 15 species of marmots around the world. They live in the northern hemisphere. Most of them live in beautiful mountains, not all. We have a holiday named after marmots, Groundhog Day.
Oh.
So Groundhog Day is a holiday. It's about climate change huge, and it's about marmots. And
sure.
I've studied 15. There are 15 species around the world. I've looked at 8 of them. But these days, I run this long-term project where we've been studying marmots since before I was born. So since 1962, the fate of individual marmots has been followed throughout their lives.
Whoa, that's crazy. It's like that movie. What was that movie, Boy? It's like they filmed it 15 years apart. Never mind.
Oh, yeah. Boyhood.
Boyhood. Thank you.
That was a good film.
Yeah, and last night I did a bar show where I talked about my breakup from 6 years ago. So we're doing the exact same thing.
Yeah,
you and
equally
I are on
important.
The same level of how much we matter in this world and what we're doing for the planet. You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you both equally for your contributions.
We should do a Groundhog Day special.
Oh, sure. Great film. Is there something in particular about them that fascinates you? I mean, I get that it's like kind of more fun and easier to study them.
We use them as a system to study all sorts of things. So I'm big. So I used to study play behavior when I was younger. Now I'm more interested in longevity because I'm older.
So
we look at factors that influence longevity. What's really interesting is for lots of animals, more social individuals live longer lives. Mm-hmm. So in humans, not being social is about as bad for you for your longevity as smoking a pack of cigarettes a day.
Whoa.
Yeah. So for marmots, it turns out marmots, the species I study most now, is not really that social. It's sort of what we call facultatively social. It has it can live alone, but it can live together. They don't really want to live together. You'll like this. Female marmots, as they get older, get crotchetier. And by getting crotchetier, they seem to do better.
Hell yeah.
So they sever their relationships. They get nasty.
Hell yeah.
And they do better. Nice girls finish last if you're a marmot.
Wow.
Get it, bitch. I'm into it. Yeah.
So wait, isn't that like a contradiction with, you know, that being social will make you live longer?
So why be social? And this comes back to Jaws as well.
Okay.
And, you know, when I'm lecturing and in my classes here, I try to connect with my students, and it's like, you know, why be social? Well, if you're surfing alone, there's some probability you're going to be eaten by a shark. Turns out that's really low.
Yeah.
Like really low.
Very low.
Like really low.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid of going in the water. Suspiciously low.
Yeah.
But if you surf with one other individual, you dilute that risk. You share it, right? So each of you, if you make this convenient assumption, you know, only one, the shark's only going to kill one of you,
right?
Then, you know,
unless
surf
it's
with two
very
others.
Hungry.
So grouping, living with others, is one way to reduce predation risk. And since all animals more or less are eaten by things, you know.
So what about these crotchety female marmots?
They live longer.
The crotchety, right. Where does that come in? Why is that?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that one out. So we look at, you know, mating systems and things. We're also use it as a system to study climate change. So they're getting up earlier in the year as it's warming up, and that either that's a good thing or a bad thing. And we're trying to sort of sort that one out.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's bad. I'm just going to assume that more than likely.
So marmots are interesting, right? So one thing we have to worry about with environmental change is that animals and plants evolved to sort of one set of environmental timings and stimuli, and then that changes, and that's called a mismatch. And they could do worse in those situations. But marmots got to get fat during the summer. So people study marmots physiologically because they get obese without having any obesity-related things. They can eat as much as they want. In fact, they have to eat as much as they want because they have to survive 8 months without eating.
Wow.
Right.
It's a long time. I love to eat.
Yeah.
Do that.
How does that work, though? Because I guess their bodies are just like, they've evolved to just do that. Because if we got super fat, if we got like 600 pounds and we didn't eat for 8 months, we'd still die.
Totally die.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, how do their bodies do that?
So, I mean, this whole thing of hibernation is really, really interesting.
But like, yeah, what's literally happening?
They
know the concept of it, but like, what is happening in the body when they're in hibernation?
They essentially shut everything down. So for a period of time, they're in what's called deep torpor. So they actively, we've borrowed marmots from the field, taken them into the lab, and hibernated them over the winter, and looked at this.
Very lightly use the word borrowed.
No, we put them back.
Kidnapped a bunch of marmots.
Yeah, you're a kidnapper, but okay.
No. No,
my God, you're like in the registry now.
Yeah,
don't
sorry.
Let this guy on an airplane.
It's official.
You should not be allowed within 25 feet of a school, as far as I'm concerned.
I don't borrow kids, just marmots.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, they burn, so they're about 5 kilos, about 12 pounds going into hibernation. They burn a gram of fat a day. They burn less than a weight of a paperclip a day when they're in deep torpor. So they shut down everything. They actively suppress their metabolism. They're not really breathing much. In fact, when we were trying to get our equipment calibrated, we're working with this marmot, and it's like, It feels like a cold stone that's fuzzy. It's like this bizarre feeling.
Whoa.
And then, you know, it's like, is it alive? Is it breathing? And, you know, we're trying to get it calibrated. It turns out that was the only animal that died.
While
we were trying to calibrate everything.
God damn it.
Can it wake up?
Yeah, they wake up periodically, and they wake up to... Well, so this is one of the foundational questions in hibernation biology. Do you pee because you wake up, or do you wake up to pee?
Ooh,
and as a man...
Wow,
and
what a beautiful, poetic question.
And as a man getting older, my position changes on this.
Sure.
in any event, because if you build metabolic waste, you have to have your kidneys up to... You have to have blood pressure in order to filter things out.
Mm.
So I don't know. In any event, they wake up every 2 weeks or so. They
it's
pee
like
and they go back in.
Like a purposeful coma.
They only pee every 2 weeks?
Yeah.
But, like, can you wake them up, like, if you're just, like, loud?
Well, when we had some power outages and the temperature changed and they would wake up. So I'm in some registry somewhere, but it's not the kid registry. It's the CDC registry, because I'm probably the only person bitten by a marmot in the middle of the winter.
Whoa.
So I pulled it out. It was all cute. I was, like, cuddling it. We were weighing it. We were checking it out. And this one wasn't quite out as much as its siblings, and it bit me.
Damn.
Did it hurt really badly?
Yeah.
Like, what happens when you get bitten by a marmot?
Well, they have, like, you know, they're rodents, and they have chisel-like teeth, and they, oof, you know...
Do you have a cool scar?
Yeah, it's a scar.
Is that very
cute? Is that a band-aid you're wearing?
Green band-aid you've got? You've bitten today?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
Well, don't borrow marmots, I guess, you know?
So, leave them alone. Yeah. Let them be marmots.
Don't try this at home.
Do we have where do marmots live? You said they have an address.
They live in the yellow-bellied marmots live all over the place in the mountains in the Intermountain West and the Rockies.
I wonder if I've seen one and just thought like, oh, it's a big squirrel.
Yeah, you probably have if you've been up and hiking in Yosemite or Kings Canyon. They eat cars in Kings Canyon.
They eat cars?
Apparently, they go in and on the engines and
what?
And they like rubber and radiator
they
fluid.
They eat rubber?
Yeah, I don't. Maybe it tastes salty. I don't know. They don't.
You've given your life to little shits that eat rubber.
I'd eat my car.
People come and blame me. People come and blame me, and they say your marmots ate my car. They're not my marmots. I study them.
Oh dear.
Well, you also kidnapped them, but I'm not going to accuse you of that again.
We brought them back home.
They're to bring it back to jars. There's a scene where they cut open a shark, which I think is a tiger shark, is like the first one they catch. And they say like the tiger shark is like a garbage can. They'll eat anything. And they have like a license plate and like fish hole and stuff like that. So do you know if that actually happens?
I think that's true. I think, you know, when people open up shark stomachs, they find all sorts of stuff in shark stomachs.
Wow.
I don't know why.
I mean, yeah, I don't know either. I just thought that was really strange.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if they were like taking a risk and just like having a funny scene, or if it was like, oh no, sharks will just like completely, because they also show them eating the boat. Like they have like a picture in a book in the film of like a shark coming and eating a boat, and then it actually happens later where the shark is just trying to bring that whole boat down and he succeeds. Spoiler alert, haven't seen Jaws. But yeah, anyway, do you know if they attack boats? Does that happen?
Well, I mean, you know, in World War II, when ships were sunk and airmen went down, you know, a lot of people were eaten by sharks.
Whoa.
And you know, the sharks would come in, you know, sort of little lifeboats and people on the lifeboats, and would, you know, attack the lifeboats and sink the lifeboats. So
damn.
I think that can happen. You know, I don't think it happens much now because we've done a really good job killing all of the sharks on the earth, which is a huge ecological problem.
Yeah. Can you speak to that? I was reading some of those numbers and it was staggering. It was like we kill like 70 million a year. Something
yeah. Sometimes
like that.
We just kill them for their fins, which is horrible.
Yeah.
What do we do with the fin?
Shark fin soup.
Shark fin soup. Come on, guys.
I actually ate shark once in Iceland, and I have felt I think about it three times a week. I literally feel so guilty about it.
Damn.
But I like it's a delicacy there. It's like a thing, you know, in Iceland they eat. I mean, I don't think like it's like they eat it like burgers, but they have it. They eat like shark meat. It was disgusting.
I
do not recommend it. It is absolutely foul.
I used to eat mako shark. You know, and we sold steaks, and you get a nice big steak of mako shark, and you grill it, and it's good.
But now, are you anti mako shark steak?
I don't eat sharks now. I did when I went to Greenland. I did not eat sharks.
Yeah, because it's like
or Iceland. I did not eat sharks.
They're like we're killing them in like like you said.
But they play an incredible ecological role. So you know, fear organizes our lives. Fear organizes our ecology. We need big predators. It keeps things in check. It keeps systems working.
Yeah.
So
that's why I always scare Chelsea every time I see her.
Yeah.
It keeps her
truly,
balanced.
I mean, you don't have to do much. So it's, you're already, you know, thank you so much for your work. But,
absolutely.
It's very, very much helpful. I would be in prison right now if it wasn't for Ethan. So. Yep.
Can you imagine comedians like going feral without fear?
I mean, absolutely, you know, not.
We wouldn't do anything. We would literally all be just like degenerates without the redeeming qualities.
Yeah. Just drug abusers for sure.
Yeah.
But sorry, continue.
Yeah. So I mean, a colleague of mine can basically see the effects of fear from space.
Whoa.
So she's looked at coral reefs.
Right.
So if you think about a beautiful coral reef, and she studies beautiful coral reefs, and she's studied them in places where there are lots of predators in the middle of the Pacific, where people haven't been hunting the sharks to extinction. I don't know how she goes in the water there, but anyway.
One of those cages.
So there's lots of sharks. But what happens is, think about a reef. A reef is producing all this stuff, and things want to eat it. And marine systems are really complex because you have lots of things that eat things that eat things that eat things, which is really cool. And sharks eat everything, including apparently license plates. So, you know, we have the sharks are eating the fish that are eating the vegetation on the reef.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see these rings of highly foraged areas that are really distinct from this, like the space shuttle.
Wow.
And from satellite imagery, because the animals are sort of forced to stay, you know, very close to their little hidey holes. And so the sharks structure the reef. So if you don't have the sharks, then the animals go out farther, and then other animals come in, and you have, you know, a dysbiosis in some extent. You have different species interacting.
Whoa.
So
I wonder what really Pico important. Robertson looks like from space. Just all the Jewish fear that's collected in one area.
Well, if you could ask your friend, maybe they can send some pictures.
I would love that. That would be amazing.
I don't know what anxiety looks like from above.
That's what you should be giving. Screw marmots. That should be what, you know, you carry out for the rest of your time at UCLA.
Yeah. Aerial views of anxious Jews.
Anxious Jews. Crown Heights. What's going on from above?
All right. We're going to take a short break and we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docu-special on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
So there's like this age-old question about being attracted to blood. I was basically reading like we over-exaggerate that big time, like sharks. If you're like bleeding a little bit, it's not a big deal. But if you dump like they did, like cans or buckets of
chum,
then they will start to react. So I just wanted to correct that because there's been so many movies where like somebody has like the smallest cut and like sharks go crazy.
Yeah, some girl's on her period and it's like shark bait. Yeah.
I also
true. Wait, no. So wait.
Oh, go.
Wait, no. Did you what? Answer it?
I think you need a lot of blood. I don't know if you know, having your period makes you more vulnerable to sharks, but that's an empirical question.
Okay, awesome.
Leave it to me to answer all the big, hot questions.
I mean, that's why you're here.
Yep.
That's why I got you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Speaking of this like weird coma state, hibernation that marmots go into, I was reading that when you flip a shark upside down, they go into like this weird trance called tonic immobility.
Yeah.
You know about this?
Yeah, a lot of animals do that. You can do it with chickens, too.
Really?
Yeah.
So explain what happens here, if you could.
Yeah, so what's interesting is, and we sort of have the legacy of this, is that one of the, I mean, we evolved from fish, right?
Uh-huh.
So sharks are electrically sensitive, so they're finding things in part by detecting slight changes in electricity in the environment, and that's how, and fish have what are called lateral lines, which are sensitive to electrical energy. So sharks are somehow able to detect muscle movement, and then that helps them find things. Well, so one thing that lots of animals do when they get scared is they freeze. And that freezing really goes back to that tonic immobility. If you're reducing your heart rate, if you're not flexing your muscles, then something that's hunting you electrically isn't going to be able to detect you.
Whoa.
Which is kind of cool.
Very cool.
I mean, there's all sorts of things animals do to avoid getting eaten because right. the name of the game is leaving offspring, and the best way not to leave offspring is to get killed prematurely.
Sure, yeah, that would do it. So, there's two different things here. One, you're saying like there are animals that will purposefully get into this mode in order not to be eaten, right, to survive. But then there's like this, which to me is more like a weird biological state that they get into just based on their positioning.
I don't know why when you put some animals upside down, they sort of freeze like that, but I suspect it has to do with this sort of ancient anti-predator response, which goes back to fishes, to make themselves less, you know, detectable. Apparently, and I've never done this, and you can try this at home. I don't have chickens at home.
We'll find
apparently it. You can sort of draw a line in front of a chicken's beak or something and sort of get it on the ground, and you can sort of hypnotize them, and they sort of lie down, and they sort of look at the line and sort of go to sleep.
What?
Apparently.
Just what? By drawing a line?
Yeah, just like with your finger or something. So people, like, you know, chicken whispering. But again, I think this is capitalizing on this sort of tonic immobility where freezing is an adaptive response and you sort of hypnotize things in some way, which somehow gets them into this state.
Do you think it's possible that's like because they're upside down, they're vulnerable and they're like not able to defend themselves because they can't see properly or they can't use their, you know, reflexes properly. So they like, they just freeze and stop, so they're just kind of like weirdly invisible to a lot of outside. I think that's how it works, if that's true
that shark, you can turn a shark upside down. I mean, I think it would thrash you at first, but I mean, if you can turn off sharks upside down and they get into that state, I think that's part of this whole anti-predator thing. Think about possums.
Playing possum.
Or the opossums we have here, they play possum. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine had an opossum in his backyard and he was trying to trap it, and I don't know if a dog got it or something, but at some point he's like, oh no, now it's dead. And he goes for a trash bag and he comes back, you know, half an hour later and it's gone. And he's like, and he's a biologist. And he's like, man, it got me.
Got him good.
So they really are, you know, looking kind of dead.
That's so interesting.
But I mean, freezing is a very adaptive response that makes you less detectable. And for things that hunt based on sort of electrical changes, makes you sort of invisible. It's a cloaking mechanism.
So you're telling me when I lay down, I'm just like, I'm doing my job as, you know, for my longevity.
I don't know. I thrash at night when I sleep, so that can't be very good.
You're like, I'm scared. I'm just going to lay on the floor.
You're going to live longer than me.
I think as long as you have, like, good friends and you're hanging out with people during your youth, and then in, you know, whatever, 20, 30 years, you become hostile and you leave everybody and you're crotchety, from what I've learned, you'll be fine.
Great. I have so much to look forward to.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds great.
You're going
to... And you give all your food to your kids and everything's good. So you're nice to your kids, but no one else.
Okay.
Yeah.
That seems
just like
reasonable.
Yeah, that's like how we all isn't that how we all do it?
Yeah, that's what I plan on doing for sure.
What's a nice old lady? It's like, honey, you are wasting your potential right now. You could be such an asshole.
You're finally old.
No one would care.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, yeah, we get it. Your hips hurt. Like, let her be mean, you know?
Do we know what you mentioned, like the being able to sense electromagnetic fields? Do we know how that works, or is that just like a mistake?
People know, but I don't know.
Okay, very cool.
There are people that know. They study this.
That seemed
it's pretty cool.
Pretty wild to me, yeah. Okay, so he mentions a couple times, Richard Dreyfuss's character, I can't remember his name now, of course.
You saw it yesterday.
I know, I just saw it last night. Hopper, right? Hooper.
Totally.
Not paying attention.
I paid enough.
Did attention. You watch the subtitles?
No, that is so distracting for me.
I
can't do it. I'm like, I'm reading.
I would have been embarrassed if I couldn't remember the name because I did watch with subtitles.
Okay,
and it's
they
said that name a bunch. I should know this. But I think
Hooper
it's Hooper.
Right, yeah.
And he says that there's this thing where there's like a rogue shark and a theory he mentioned called territoriality.
Yeah, that's sort of, that's not a theory. It's okay. That animals defend space. I mean, we all defend space, you know.
Okay.
Your house is your space. You let people in. You hope that other people don't come in. Mm-hmm. So territoriality is something that many, many species do. Not every species is territorial, but many species are territorial.
Okay.
So I think so little has been known about sharks. Now we have people going around and putting satellite tags on them, and we can see where they move. We can see what they do. We have a whole revolution in the ability to study animal movement right now because people can put tags on animals that have GPS location, position, Whoa. And shoot it up to a satellite, and you can sort of follow them in real time. We've got colleagues in Australia who tag great white sharks, white pointers, and follow them in real time.
Wow.
So,
what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen marmots or any other animal do?
It's a great question.
A comedy show I went to a while ago.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Marmots are kind of interesting, but other animals are interesting too. What's weird? What do you mean? In what dimension?
Whatever
weird?
You define as weird.
Maybe
you know?
One did.
So one of my favorite things I saw was some animals help each other, right? And it's called helpers at the nest.
Yeah, you're right. That is weird.
Right. Yeah. So, why would
you
they?
Why
that?
Would you help? So why be social? Why do you want to hang out with others?
I don't know.
And get diseases and you know do things, but you know maybe predation pressure.
Listen, so, they bitch at you about stuff.
I know.
Yeah. It's like Dave, you never pay your rent.
But it's better. These are kookaburras, so all they do is bitch at each other. Have you ever heard of kookaburra?
Mm-hmm.
Kookaburra. We used to live in Australia. Kookaburras are cool. So kookaburras. Or what are called cooperative breeders. They help each other.
Okay.
And I'd read all this stuff about cooperative breeders, and there's always this tension, and you know, who really wants to help, you know, your parents raise the siblings. So I watched this kookaburra have this big snake in its mouth, and it's calling. And there's a baby in front that's begging. So it's the baby's begging, and the kookaburra is kind of calling with a snake in its mouth. And everyone in the family comes and watches this whole process.
Whoa.
And you know, but the kookaburra would put the snake in the baby's mouth, and the baby would sort of like you know try to swallow, and the kookaburra would pull it back out. And all the parents are coming, and all the siblings are coming and watching. And this went on for a long time. And then after everyone came and said, "Oh, Fred is helping raise Junior." Fred took the snake and ate it himself.
Wow.
That was pretty wild.
That's the sequel to Lion King.
Yeah. Life is tough in the forest.
What's the crazy thing you've seen an animal do?
Oh, dear. Well, I don't watch animals all day.
People are animals.
People, yeah. I was just going to say.
Oh, so there you go.
Weirdest things I've seen a person do.
Yeah.
Well, I just got back from a Jamaican sex resort for work, so I saw a lot of weird stuff there, okay? But I don't, you know, it's like, what's weird, right? So for these people, their lifestyle, it's not weird at all. And, you know, frankly, I learned it probably isn't weird. But this Jamaican sex resort was like, it's a fascinating place. It truly is. Do you know hedonism?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's a lot of people who are in there like, who are like middle-aged, they're like kind of 40s, 50s, 60s, and they go, it's like a swingers resort, and swingers are kind of dying off. It's like, mm-hmm. I feel like our generation, we're all just like, it's like poly or whatever, but it's like a swingers resort, and it's just a bunch of people who like to get naked and have sex by pools and try to save their marriage. Like, that is what
Have sex with their partners by pools and save their marriage?
Anything goes. I saw a lot of fluids by pools this last couple weeks, and it was really crazy. But I was just sort
And they
of
pay
like,
you for this.
This is my job. I'm a travel journalist, so I go to these places. I mean, I don't know if your boss has ever called you and been like, "Hey, I'm gonna need you to attend a squirting workshop in Jamaica," and you have to do it. But I did, and
the occupational
it was,
health and safety hazards.
Right? I'm like, is there HR on the phone right now?
Yeah.
But it was fascinating, and like, I went in with, you know, I'm pretty like open minded. I mean, I'm like, you know, from LA. I'm comedy. Like, I've seen some shit, whatever. But like, I was sort of just like, well, this is going to be kind of weird. And I had some judgment. And then I went and I was like, this is awesome. Like, these people feel so free and like they can just be. And a lot of them are like from like small conservative towns where they can't be who they are. They can't have like their fetishes or their kinks or whatever they want to do. And they feel judged. And then they go to this place and it's like a utopia for all your whatever weird stuff you want to do with other people's junk. And I am here for it. So I saw a lot of like public sex. I saw a lot of weird orgies going on. I saw a lot of like, man, it's crazy what people will do with their time when you give them like one drink and permission to rub up against other people they want to rub up against. But
yeah.
So that's a long-winded way of saying I have seen some humans do some weird sexual stuff the past couple weeks.
So I get up in the morning to understand the diversity of behavior.
Yeah.
And there are species, including some ground squirrels, that are much more like that than not.
Wow.
And then, but I mean, mating systems vary across, you know, the animal kingdom. And explaining that variation, coming up with rules to explain it, is sort of what inspires me. So there are, so marmots are one of our ground-dwelling squirrels. Their relatives are prairie dogs and sort of smaller ground squirrels. We've got some ground squirrels in Los Angeles you might see periodically. They might have plague.
Oh, sweet.
But aside from that, there are some squirrels that are in estrus for like 20 minutes once a year. And what you get is you get what's called scramble competition, where all the guys are following them around and and it's just tumbling and you know,
wow.
Fur's flying and the males are getting beaten up. And
it's exactly what I just witnessed.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, sounds, you know, very similar.
It's very interesting. It's very interesting to see people, because you're taking people that, like, you know, we're all experiencing life sort of in this country, at least, or, you know, wherever we're living, sort of the same, right? We're like having, and then you go to this very extreme situation and you just get to see people that you would see at like Target and Gelson's, and then you just get to see them like
naked.
Like, and what I thought was cool was that it was sort of the ultimate icebreaker, where like everybody immediately was much more open and friendly and nice and not sexual necessarily. Like, I'm just standing in this pool.
Was your reaction like, did you thought like you handled it well and like kept your composure? And because I can tell you, just I had a brief, I went to a spa here in LA, like a wee spa.
Yeah.
And I had never been to anything like that before. And I had taken an edible earlier in the day, which was probably a gigantic mistake. And just upon seeing all the guys in there nude walking around, I got like giggle fits really bad.
Really?
And I was just like, because I was also with my best friend and I just couldn't believe that this was going on for whatever reason. And so I was just like, not laughing at them, but just laughing that we were in the situation. And I don't know, I just basically had to exit myself from this, from the whole thing, because I just felt bad. Like, nobody else is laughing but me. There's nothing funny going on. I'm a child. And so, I don't know. I just was curious, what was your, you know, were you in there like, oh, this is cool, I do this all the time, this is not a big deal, I will talk about my work with you, you know?
Well, I don't do this all the time, but right. I will say that I think a combination of, like, I lived abroad for 5 years, and where I was living, like in Europe, nudity is not as big of a deal. There's a lot more kind of like, it's just a body, relax. Like, why are you making it weird? And so I think that because of my exposure to that, it wasn't quite as, whoa, what am I like? There's, you know, boobs and junk everywhere, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think, no, I think it's in the beginning, I think you'll probably, I mean, you're sorry. Like, we adapt quickly, right? I feel like when you're in an environment, like humans kind of just like, it's weird for a second, and then quickly you're just sort of like able to get with the program. And
well,
like,
I think, you know, we vary as do animals,
right,
on their sort of how quickly they vary and adapt.
Yeah. I think for me, I am pretty adaptable. And so like I'll have my initial discomfort, but I also feel like I'm like, I said yes to this, like, I don't have to be here, like, I can leave, I can go in my room, I can leave the environment, I'm not forced to be in this pool with people. So it was just sort of like, it took me a second to get comfortable, but then I realized like how, I think, okay, here's what was more uncomfortable. There's a side of the resort. Sorry, this is totally not about Jaws.
I love it.
Or about your, or about science.
It is about animal behavior.
Yeah,
it is about animal behavior, so I don't feel quite as bad monopolizing this. Okay,
great.
But there's a side of the resort that's called the prude side, and then the side that's called the nude side. And the prude side, it's clothing optional. So you can be naked or you can be in clothes.
Okay.
The nude side, you're not allowed to wear clothes at all. Nothing.
Mandatory nudeness.
Mandatory. If you're seen with any clothes on, they'll ask you to leave.
Funny.
Is.
Yeah. Sir, excuse me.
Yeah.
Take your clothes off or get the hell
out
of here.
Ma'am, you're wearing a hat. No. But it was, so I felt more uncomfortable when I was in the on the prude side wearing. We're not wearing clothes.
Oh, sure.
Because there was other people wearing clothes or being naked. And the fact that there was anyone wearing clothes made me feel really weird.
Right.
But when I was on the nude side and I was not wearing clothes, everyone, and there's all, it's not,
you're
like everyone's a model.
Page.
Everyone's like, it's all different bodies and colors and sizes and shapes and all these different things, right? And so you're not like, you're not as focused on your individual body because there's just everything around you and no one's really like staring because not the only thing in the room that's different.
Yeah.
So I felt like quickly I just didn't care as much, and which I think is like a healthy thing for us to like feel like we can be naked and not feel so ashamed of our bodies or weird about them.
Yeah.
So I thought the whole experience ended up being like, you know, you can go real juvenile with it, be like, oh, it's so funny. There's like naked people and people having sex. And but like, to me, there was a very meaningful experience in seeing all these people be so happy and like free. And then also confronting your own comfort levels with like your own body and how you see other bodies. And I'm getting real too wooey with it, but I'm telling you, it was really cool.
No, that makes sense.
I thought it was interesting.
I was pretty much raised with the same belief that it's like not a big deal. You know, our bodies are our bodies. It's very natural.
Yeah.
I was, you know, when after eating a weed chocolate, my brain disintegrates very quickly. Okay, so we are running low on time, unbelievably. This has flown by. But I have a few shark facts I just want of like rattle off, and you know, feel free to weigh in.
Tell us something. Teach us. Yeah. Teach us.
Oh, I'll teach everybody. So first of all, I didn't know this, but sharks are constantly losing and regrowing teeth. Do you know about this? Mm-hmm. I had no idea. It says can go through like 30,000 to 50,000 teeth in a lifetime.
The big ones live a long time.
Yeah, and they live a long time, like 100, 200 years or something like that. Anyways, I didn't know any of this about sharks, and I was
I mean, so things that live a long time are almost by definition vulnerable because they often breed later and they have lower productivity and, and you know, so when you start killing all the sharks, you know, it's really hard for populations to recover.
Mm. Wow. So, yeah, also just stop killing sharks, guys. Like, super dick move.
Super dick move.
Leave them alone. Eat something else. What are you doing? Avocados are a miracle.
Yeah.
you know, more people are killed by falling coconuts every year than sharks.
Right, yeah.
It's true.
That makes sense. There's
coconut trees.
Like, yeah,
gotta cut down those coconut trees.
Yeah, also don't walk below trees, guys.
Be careful in the tropics next time you go.
Okay, I'll be sure to think about that. Thank you.
Yeah, don't be afraid of shark attacks. That's definitely something I learned today researching. It's like it almost never happens. You're much more likely to get struck by lightning. But also don't be afraid of that. What kind of life are you leading?
Just don't leave your house. You know, that's kind of how I feel. Just stay inside.
But also socialize and have a community friend group.
Right. Reddit. I'm just kidding.
Reddit exists. You don't have to go anywhere. I read that they very rarely get any type of cancer or get sick at all.
I think people are studying that.
Yeah.
I don't know more about it.
Okay. I thought that was fascinating. Yeah, they're trying to figure out how we can like take, I don't know, some of their cells or
shark
something.
Shark goo and become...
Shark goo, yeah.
Like,
so, I mean, you know...
Somebody's shoving shark goo up their butt.
To live long and prosper, you got to get things that fix things. So, you know, people are looking at long-lived animals. There's a clam that lives like 350 years or something.
Whoa.
And, you know, people are looking at how they... I mean, because if you're out there, you're going to get mutations. And so,
right.
You know, how do you fix mutations? Most mutations will kill you or don't do anything, but some of those might cause cancer. So, you know, there are cell repair mechanisms and DNA repair mechanisms. And that's what people are looking at when, while they're looking at these species that live a long time and saying, well, what's the trick that allows you to live long? And then,
So it's like the longer we're around as a species, the less likely we are to be developing these mutations.
The longer individuals of a species live. So there are long-lived species and short-lived species.
Mm-hmm.
And for longer-lived species, to live a long life, there's a whole suite of things that have to happen, including at the molecular and cellular level. And people are looking at long-lived species to try to understand, you know, why don't they get cancer? How do they fix this? How do they fix
that? Right. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I was reading that they were around like way before the dinosaurs, but that they haven't really evolved that much. So I was thinking like, oh, maybe they used to get cancers and illnesses, and just because they've been around for so long, their like DNA has figured out how to just be a healthy swimming shark.
I suspect there's some lineages that have been around for a long time, but you know, remember lineages split and change, and you know, there still could be speciation. Horseshoe crabs go back a real long time. Have you ever been on the East Coast and seen horseshoe crabs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so those go back a long time and they're pretty unchanged from the fossil record. But
cool.
And some sharks. I
wonder if they get sick.
People use their blood for biomedical research.
Apparently. So sounds like it's a good. They know what's going on.
Yeah, they live a long time.
They don't get sick. I want some of that horseshoe crab blood. If you could hook me up with that. Mail me some horseshoe crab blood, please. Okay, I read that despite the fact that almost an equal amount of men and women swim in the ocean, men account for nearly 90% of shark attack victims.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Well, that's test for your menstruation hypothesis, right?
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell we're doing, but apparently 9 out of 10 times it's men that get attacked.
Are there more men? Okay. Are there more male surfers than female surfers?
Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Are there more men in the water to begin with?
No, that's the thing. They're saying like equally men and women are in the ocean.
Okay, great.
So there's something specific about us.
Sharks are smart.
Because sharks are smart.
Take out the bad one. They can smell your
They're trying to help the entire species.
They're like, get rid of the boys first. The girls are doing fine. It's the men, we got to handle that population.
Maybe there's more meat to eat.
Oh, more meat.
Really?
Bigger animal, you know.
But I feel like women are maybe more fleshy in some ways, you know, right?
Do you want a small carrot or do you want a big carrot if you're hungry? You go for the big carrot.
Men are generally larger. That makes sense.
Do they look more like seals?
I don't know.
We act more like seals.
Seriously.
See? I read they don't have vocal cords and they don't use any audible sounds to communicate.
Could be true. They certainly don't have vocal cords because, I mean, they're not in a place where they're going to, you know, communicate vocally underwater like that.
Yeah.
There are fish that make sounds, but they don't do it by vocal cords.
Mm.
How do dolphins make sounds?
Great call. Don't know.
So they can do it out of their mouth, but I think it comes from the melon, which is like their head.
Whoa.
A vibration in their head?
Yeah. I don't know if they have vocal cords. I don't think they have vocal cords.
Well, a vibration in your head is what speaking is. I mean, this is also in your head, it's your throat.
I know. I was just thinking of like a head shaking and a sound emitting.
That's a good question.
It sounds wild.
I don't know that.
Well, you're fired.
Okay.
Oh, man, that sucks.
Someone take his book publishing deal away.
No, the best thing to know is that, that we know nothing.
I'm joking. I'm totally joking. You are smarter than I would ever be in 4 lifetimes of studying.
I don't think so.
Oh.
I should know whether I don't think they have vocal cords.
Yeah, I found that pretty wild. I don't know. But I guess just because of movies and stuff in my head, I just hear sharks roaring. But that sounds ridiculous now.
But I mean, the way you make a sound is you get air going. And vibrating something.
Right.
So in mammals, they're vocal cords. Mm-hmm. In terrestrial mammals, so sea lions have vocal cords,
right?
Because
right?
They came. But whales and dolphins, I don't think. I mean, they vibrate
something else
sort of
going
melon
on over
or
there.
Something.
Yeah, whales are just shooting water out of their. That's making a noise. It's like a sneeze.
Yep.
So they can do that, and they also can make other sounds. So mm-hmm. some. Dolphins can make ultrasonic sounds and echolocate.
I know, isn't it
the
cool?
The clicks.
Yeah, dolphins are super cool.
So cool.
Go Miami Dolphins.
And they're so nice.
And
you're like, I heard.
Dolphins, a lot of times they look like they're smiling. We did a thing on dolphins a while back, and apparently they are not. It just looks like that, but they're not having fun. Like, people like to go swimming with the dolphins. Yeah. That's like a big tourism thing. Don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
That's like a super dick move, apparently.
Don't ride elephants either.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. Just leave them alone.
Basically, leave animals alone, guys, and just build like
dogs. Get a dog. They love hanging out with you.
Yeah,
some
dogs.
Really?
Oh, on their own space.
Okay, wait. Which dog should
which
we not
dogs
own?
Don't want, I thought like dogs.
No. On an individual basis, you've got sort of shy dogs and other dogs.
Sure.
But in general,
yeah,
dogs are like, yeah, take me and please play with me.
We've bred them, or they've bred us to work with them.
Yeah. If you're on vacation and you want to hang out with an animal. Bring your dog.
Yeah.
Find someone with a dog.
Get a cat or something.
Yeah. Don't kidnap a dolphin or an elephant.
Or just go bird watching. Or go elephant watching.
Elephant watching. Yeah, that sounds good. I would love that.
What about camels?
You ever ridden a camel? A
couple times.
Yeah, it's sort of a weird feeling.
It is horrifying.
They're pretty tall.
They should not be dancers because they have absolutely no rhythm. They just straight up flop down, and then when they're getting up, they just jerk themselves up. They're not like, it's not a fluid motion. They just literally fall.
Did it seem like they liked you, or were they upset?
Camels do whatever they want to do, including spit at you.
Yeah.
I mean, camels are really good animals, and that they, I don't want to do that.
I've also ridden a donkey, and that was also equally weird. I should stop riding animals that I can just take a bus. Like, I don't need to,
Scooter.
Scooter. I can walk.
I've used pack animals before where we've loaded stuff on animals.
Get
yaks are fun. Yaks almost killed me.
Almost killed you?
Yeah.
What happened?
So we were doing a wildlife survey in Pakistan. I worked in Pakistan for years studying marmots, and this I had a grant to look do a wildlife survey to look at this place for snow leopards, and it's supposed to have lots of snow leopards. I think we were there a month too early because they come down when it gets cold and the snow line comes down, and we were there before the snow line came down. So, you know, we saw some footprints, but not lots and lots of them. In any event, it's like a month-long wildlife survey. We're in the middle of absolutely nowhere, and we have all these yaks, you know, helping carry our stuff. Uh-huh. So I would see my assistants, like, hop on the yaks and ride them to get them all together, because basically you let your yaks, you know, wander around at night, and then you get them in the morning. And I'm like, I can do that. I go, can I ride the yak? And we get to this big, flat grassland, this pommier, and they're like, yeah, here's where you can ride the yak. So a yak has, like, a nose ring, and it's got, like, this yak hair bridle, but it's just a rope connected to the nose ring.
Okay.
So, you know, right, pull right to go right, pull left to go left. So I hop on this yak, and it just takes off. And it's going towards, and we're about 7 to 8 days away from the nearest road, and about another 8 hours after that to the nearest hospital.
Jeez.
And so we're sort of out there, and this thing is running across this rocky, you know, meadow at 15,000 feet, and it's running towards this lake, and I'm like pulling and trying to get it to slow down, and it won't slow down, and it's going and going and going, and I'm pulling to the right, and it just like puts its head up and goes vroom. So eventually, it stops right in front of the water, and I jump off. My friends and wife and our guides were absolutely in hysterics. And, you know, they eventually came up, and I'm still shaking because I almost got killed. And I said, you know, I'm pulling to the right, and it's going, you know, it just keeps going. He's like, oh, you have to pull down into the right to make it go right, and down to the left to make it, and down to make it stop, not up to make it stop. So I was giving it the exact opposite commands. Yeah.
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
You didn't study that in school?
Everyone knows it now.
Oh, yeah, that's true. So next time
Now you can ride a yak.
Yeah, riding yaks, you'll know what to do. Down.
That's crazy, though.
I think these yaks were ill-trained. They should have, you know, up
it's the yak's
forward.
Fault.
You should have known, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listen, thank you both for joining me. It was a fascinating conversation. I'm glad you both came in. Where can people find you, Chelsea Frank?
Find me on Instagram at Chelsea Frank.
Great.
And on Twitter at Chelsea S, as in Sarah Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Frank, like the man's name.
Right.
This should be easy, you know?
Yeah. No, it is easy.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you chose a great name.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
it's natural,
welcome.
And I appreciate you saying that.
Absolutely.
You didn't even choose it.
Doctor, where can people take your classes, read your publications?
Yeah, you can get a lot of information at my website. So if you just Google marmots at UCLA, you'll find all sorts of stuff.
Great, love that. Marmots at
same,
UCLA.
Same. If you just Google marmots at UCLA, you can also find all my information on there.
Right, right, right.
Okay, perfect. If you Google fecal transplants,
you'll get stuff.
You'll get something.
Make sure you have your safe search on when
right,
you do that.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you both. And I'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for having us. It was
Thanks.
Very fun.
Absolutely. Bye.
Super fun.
Bye.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our associate producer is Emily Feld. Our editor is Lucas Bollinger. And the executive person in charge of fecal transplants, Deucer. I'm sorry I had to. Is Brett Kushner. Follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show. Or feel free to send us an email, badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. Let us know what you think about the show, any movies we should do in the future. I always appreciate getting your emails. And of course, leave us an iTunes review. That lets other people hear about the show. And I'll see you all next week. Bye.